Chapter 44. When they had traveled slowly forward for some short distance, Nell ventured to steal a look round the caravan and observe it more closely. One half of it, that moiety in which the comfortable proprietress was then seated, was carpeted, and so partitioned off at the further end as to accommodate a sleeping place, constructed after the fashion of a berth on board ship, which was shaded, like the little windows, with fair white curtains, and looked comfortable enough, though by what kind of gymnastic exercise the lady of the caravan ever contrived to get into it was an unfathomable mystery. The other half served for a kitchen, and was fitted up with a stove whose small chimney passed through the roof. It held also a closet or larder, several chests, a great pitcher of water, and a few cooking utensils and articles of crockery. These latter necessaries hung upon the walls, which, in that portion of the establishment devoted to the lady of the caravan, were ornamented with such gayer and lighter decorations as a triangle, and a couple of well-thumbed tambourines. The lady of the caravan sat at one window in all the pride and poetry of the musical instruments, and little Nell and her grandfather sat at the other in all the humility of the kettle and saucepans, while the machine jogged on and shifted the darkening prospect very slowly. At first the two travelers spoke little, and only in whispers, but as they grew more familiar with the place they ventured to converse with greater freedom, and talked about the country through which they were passing, and the different objects that presented themselves, until the old man fell asleep, which the lady of the caravan observing, invited Nell to come and sit beside her. "Well, child," apostrophe she said, "how do you like this way of traveling?" Apostrophe, Nell replied, that she thought it was very pleasant indeed, to which the lady assented in the case of people who had their spirits. For herself, she said, she was troubled with a lowness in that respect which required a constant stimulant, though whether the aforesaid stimulant was derived from the suspicious bottle, of which mention has been already made, or from other sources, she did not say. "That's the happiness of you young people," apostrophe she continued. "You don't know what it is to be low in your feelings. You always have your appetites too, and what a comfort that is." Apostrophe, Nell thought that she could sometimes dispense with her own appetite very conveniently, and thought, moreover, that there was nothing either in the lady's personal appearance or in her manner of taking tea to lead to the conclusion that her natural relish for meat and drink had at all failed her. She silently assented, however, as in duty bound, to what the lady had said, and waited until she should speak again. Instead of speaking, however, she sat looking at the child for a long time in silence, and then getting up, brought out from a corner a large roll of canvas about a yard in width, which she laid upon the floor and spread open with her foot until it nearly reached from one end of the caravan to the other. "There, child," apostrophe she said, "read that." Apostrophe, Nell walked down it, and read aloud, in enormous black letters, the inscription, "Jarley's Waxwork." Apostrophe, "read it again," apostrophe said the lady, complacently. "Jarley's Waxwork," apostrophe repeated Nell. "That's me," apostrophe said the lady. "I am Mrs. Jarley," apostrophe, giving the child an encouraging look, intended to reassure her, and let her know that, although she stood in the presence of the original Jarley, she must not allow herself to be utterly overwhelmed and borne down. The lady of the caravan unfolded another scroll, whereon was the inscription, 100 figures the full size of life, apostrophe, and then another scroll, on which was written, "the only stupendous collection of real waxwork in the world," apostrophe, and then several smaller scrolls with such inscriptions as "now exhibiting within the genuine and only Jarley Jarley's unrivaled collection. Jarley is the delight of the nobility and gentry. The royal family are the patrons of Jarley. apostrophe when she had exhibited these leviathans of public announcement to the astonished child, she brought forth specimens of the lesser fry in the shape of handbills, some of which were couched in the form of parodies on popular melodies, as believe me, if all Jarley's waxworks are rare I saw thy show in youthful prime over the water to Jarley, apostrophe while, to consult all tastes, others were composed with a view to the lighter and more facetious spirits, as a parody on the favorite air of, if I had a donkey, apostrophe beginning, if I knowed a donkey what wouldn't go to see Mrs. Jarley's waxwork show, do you think I'd acknowledge him? Oh no no. Then run to Jarley's, besides several compositions in prose, purporting to be dialogues between the Emperor of China and an oyster, or the Archbishop of Canterbury and a dissenter on the subject of church rates, but all having the same moral, namely, that the reader must make haste to Jarley's, and that children and servants were admitted at half price. When she had brought all these testimonials of her important position in society to bear upon her young companion, Mrs. Jarley rolled them up, and having put them carefully away, sat down again, and looked at the child in triumph. Never go into the company of a filthy punch any more, apostrophe said Mrs. Jarley, after this. Apostrophe, I never saw any wax work, ma'am, apostrophe said Nell. Is it funnier than punch? Apostrophe, funnier. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mrs. Jarley in a shrill voice. It is not funny at all. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Nell, with all possible humility. It isn't funny at all, apostrophe repeated Mrs. Jarley. It's calm and what's that word again, critical? No classical, that's it, it's calm and classical. No low beatings and knockings about, no jokings and squeakings like your precious punches, but always the same, with a constantly unchanging air of coldness and gentility. And so like life, that if waxwork only spoke and walked about, you'd hardly know the difference. I won't go so far as to say that, as it is, I've seen waxwork quite like life, but I've certainly seen some life that was exactly like waxwork. Apostrophe, is it here, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Nell, whose curiosity was awakened by this description. Is what here, child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the waxwork, ma'am. Apostrophe, why, bless you, child, what are you thinking of? How could such a collection be here, where you see everything except the inside of one little cupboard and a few boxes? It's gone on in the other ones to the assembly rooms, and there it'll be exhibited the day after tomorrow. You are going to the same town, and you will see it, I dare say. It's natural to expect that you will see it, and I've no doubt you will. I suppose you couldn't stop away if you was to try ever so much. Apostrophe, I shall not be in the town, I think, ma'am, apostrophe said the child. Not there. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mrs. Jarley. Then where will you be? Apostrophe, I don't quite know. I am not certain. Apostrophe, you don't mean to say that you're traveling about the country without knowing where you're going to? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lady of the caravan. What curious people you are. What line are you in? You look to me at the races, child, as if you were quite out of your element and had got there by accident. Apostrophe, we were there quite by accident, apostrophe returned Nell, confused by this abrupt questioning. We are poor people, ma'am, and are only wandering about. We have nothing to do, I wish we had. Apostrophe, you amaze me more and more, apostrophe said Mrs. Jarley, after remaining for some time as mute as one of her own figures. Why, what do you call yourselves? Not beggars? Apostrophe, indeed, ma'am, I don't know what else we are, apostrophe returned the child. Lord bless me, apostrophe said the lady of the caravan. I never heard of such a thing. Who'd have thought it? Apostrophe, she remained so long silent after this exclamation, that Nell feared she felt her having been induced to bestow her protection and conversation upon one so poor, to be an outrage upon her dignity, that nothing could repair. This persuasion was rather confirmed than otherwise by the tone in which he at length broke silence and said, "And yet you can read. And write too, I shouldn't wonder?" "Yes, ma'am," said the child, fearful of giving new offense by the confession. "Well, and what a thing that is," returned Mrs. Jarley. "I can't." Nell said, indeed in a tone which might imply either that she was reasonably surprised to find the genuine and only Jarley, who was the delight of the nobility and gentry, and the peculiar pet of the royal family, destitute of these familiar arts, or that she presumed so great a lady could scarcely stand in need of such ordinary accomplishments. In whatever way Mrs. Jarley received the response, it did not provoke her to further questioning, or tempt her into any more remarks at the time, for she relapsed into a thoughtful silence, and remained in that state so long, that Nell withdrew to the other window, and rejoined her grandfather, who was now awake. At length the lady of the caravan shook off her fit of meditation, and, summoning the driver to come under the window at which she was seated, held a long conversation with him in a low tone of voice, as if she were asking his advice on an important point, and discussing the pros and cons of some very weighty matter. This conference at length concluded, she drew in her head again, and beckoned Nell to approach. "And the old gentleman too," said Mrs. Jarley, "for I want to have a word with him. Do you want a good situation for your granddaughter, master? If you do, I can put her in the way of getting one. What do you say?" "I can't leave her," answered the old man. "We can't separate. What would become of me without her?" "I should have thought you were old enough to take care of yourself, if you ever will be," retorted Mrs. Jarley sharply. "But he never will be," said the child in an earnest whisper. "I fear he never will be again. Pray do not speak harshly to him. We are very thankful to you," she added aloud, "but neither of us could part from the other if all the wealth of the world were halved between us." Mrs. Jarley was a little disconcerted by this reception of her proposal, and looked at the old man, who tenderly took Nell's hand, and detained it in his own, as if she could have very well dispensed with his company, or even his earthly existence. After an awkward pause, she thrust her head out of the window again, and had another conference with the driver upon some point on which they did not seem to agree quite so readily as on their former topic of discussion. But they concluded at last, and she addressed the grandfather again. "If you're really disposed to employ yourself," said Mrs. Jarley, "there would be plenty for you to do in the way of helping to dust the figures, and take the checks, and so forth. What I want your granddaughter for, is to point them out to the company. They would be soon learned, and she has a way with her that people wouldn't think unpleasant, though she does come after me, for I've been always accustomed to go round with visitors myself, which I should keep on doing now, only that my spirits make a little ease absolutely necessary. It's not a common offer, bear in mind," said the lady, rising into the tone and manner in which she was accustomed to address her audiences. "It's Jarley's wax work, remember. The duty's very light and genteel, the company particularly select, the exhibition takes place in assembly rooms, town halls, large rooms at inns, or auction galleries. There is none of your open-air vagrancy at Jarley's, recollect. There is no tarpaulin and sawdust at Jarley's, remember. Every expectation held out in the handbills is realized to the utmost, and the whole forms an effect of imposing brilliance I hitherto unrivaled in this kingdom. Remember that the price of admission is only sixpence, and that this is an opportunity which may never occur again." Descending from the sublime, when she had reached this point, to the details of common life, Mrs. Jarley remarked that with reference to salary she could pledge herself to no specific sum until she had sufficiently tested Nell's abilities, and narrowly watched her in the performance of her duties. but board and lodging, both for her and her grandfather, she bound herself to provide, and she furthermore passed her word that the board should always be good in quality and in quantity plentiful. Nell and her grandfather consulted together, and while they were so engaged, Mrs. Jarley with her hands behind her walked up and down the caravan, as she had walked after tea on the dull earth, with uncommon dignity and self-esteem. Nor will this appear so slight a circumstance as to be unworthy of mention, when it is remembered that the caravan was in uneasy motion all the time, and that none but a person of great natural stateliness and acquired grace could have forborne to stagger. "Now, child?" cried Mrs. Jarley, coming to a halt as Nell turned towards her. "We are very much obliged to you, ma'am," said Nell, "and thankfully accept your offer." "And you will never be sorry for it," returned Mrs. Jarley. "I'm pretty sure of that. So as that's all settled, let us have a bit of supper." In the meanwhile, the caravan blundered on, as if it too had been drinking strong beer and was drowsy, and came at last upon the paved streets of a town which were clear of passengers, and quiet, for it was by this time near midnight, and the townspeople were all abed. As it was too late an hour to repair to the exhibition room, they turned aside into a piece of waste ground that lay just within the old town gate, and drew up there for the night, near to another caravan, which, notwithstanding that it bore on the lawful panel the great name of Jarley, and was employed besides in conveying from place to place the waxwork which was its country's pride, was designated by a groveling stamp office as a common stage wagon, and numbered to 7,000-odd, as though its precious freight were mere flour or coals. This ill-used machine being empty, for it had deposited its burden at the place of exhibition, and lingered here until its services were again required, was assigned to the old man as his sleeping place for the night. And within its wooden walls, Nell made him up the best bed she could, from the materials at hand. For herself, she was to sleep in Mrs. Jarley's own traveling carriage, as a signal mark of that lady's favor and confidence. She had taken leave of her grandfather, and was returning to the other wagon, when she was tempted by the coolness of the night to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.